The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 U.S.-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out Pear.com today to learn more. That's Pear.com.
The Major Spoilers podcast covers news, reviews, and of course, spoilers, and goes into details about the topics discussed. So if you haven't read, listened, or watched the items we talk about, you might want to come back later.
I'm Matthew.
Rodrigo.
And I'm Steven, and you're listening to the Major Spoilers podcast, the podcast for pop culture and comic fans.
In this issue, Detective Masters gets a case she might not be able to crack. Detective Tracy's two-way wrist radio is basically a Fitbit. Dudley Dawson doesn't detect danger, and Luffy reminds us all why fruit is not a real dessert. Sure, you can dance the white swan, but you don't have the passion to be the black swan. You'll just have to settle for being a gray pigeon. Maybe a nice red hawk, but no matter what, it's all for the birds, because the Major Spoilers podcast is on the air.
Welcome to issue 1071 of the Major Spoilers podcast. Thank you for downloading and checking us out this week. Speaking of gray pigeons, Mason came home from a tennis meet the other day. He got first. But he comes running in, and I was like, what's going on? And he's like, Dad, a hawk just killed a pigeon in the front yard. It swooped down and just nailed this thing right in the yard and then looked at me, and then it flew off. And sure enough, the next day I go out and I thought somebody spray painted the front lawn with white paint. And I go over, no, it's just feathers everywhere. So why did I bring that up? Because Matthew mentioned something about pigeons in his.
Exactly. Pigeons and hawks. Yeah, pigeons and that, and by the way, is your son's superhero origin.
I did tell the smaller members of the household that, hey, you might want to be a little careful going outside, because if there really is a hawk going around killing prey in our neighborhood, which that's not typical, then it may be going after anything it can find. So just be careful.
Smaller members, do you mean Mrs.?
No, I'm just talking about everybody who's shorter than me, which is everybody.
Mrs. Frisbee.
Yes,
Mrs. Frisbee and the rats of Mim.
Yes. We're back. Hey, I think we're back. There was one little issue that somebody pointed out earlier today with one of the other feeds. I think that is corrected now. So if you're listening to this, congratulations. That problem has also been worked out. Now, let us get into some reviews. I'm going to go first this week because technically this came out as a Comixology Originals story some months ago, but now it is finally seeing print over at Dark Horse Comics. It's Dudley Dawson and the Forever Machine number one from Scott Snyder, Jamal Igel, and Juan Castro. As I said, it is a print edition of the digital first comics that happens with Comixology and Dark Horse. And I think one other publisher announced recently are going to be printing Comixology digital comics for people that need to have print stuff. The other thing about this, for a $4.99 comic, it is basically a double size comic. So you're getting two issues together in this one book. And it is the story about a kid named Dudley, who is a really smart kid going to a science school. He's almost, I want to say he's almost a Miles Morales, but without the ornery side to him, without the criminal element in his family side to him. But his dad has a failing heart, and he just really wants to invent things so he can make a lot of money, so he can take care of his dad. And the narrator is saying that, yes, Dudley is smart, but he'll never be one of the great inventors, because the great inventors aren't thinking about a quick turnaround in making a buck. But it does turn out that Dudley has created a pretty cool, awesome thing. It fails spectacularly at the school demo. And when he comes back late at night to try to figure out what went wrong, he bumps into his teacher, who is telling him to get out of here. There's bad guys coming. And she slaps a watch on his wrist and then bad guys attack and kill her. And the only thing that is saving him is a little corgi dog that can talk English, not barking stuff, but just English stuff. And he goes on. We find out that that is the narrator of the story, and that the watch that Dudley has can only come off on his death, and that there are bad guys who are trying to get this watch. And so even though it's two issues worth of stuff, there's not a lot that happens. I mean, you start to get some plot points and you got to get to see how smart of a kid Dudley Dotson is. Jamal Igle's art is fantastic in this. Just for that alone, I would say pick it up. But the story moves by very, very quickly for 48 plus pages of comics. And we do get set up for the big bad and the reveal of this secret society, two secret societies, the Secret Society of Inventors and a Secret Society of Evil People, call them what you will, that are trying to get this watch so that they can change history forever and bring in creatures from another dimension to conquer our world. It's fun. It's interesting. I have only read Scott Snyder's more adult-oriented stuff, his Batman stuff and stuff that he's done for others that are, you know, horror, scary, you know, gruesome kind of things. This feels like something that is aimed at YA or maybe even middle grade readers. And so it's a little weird in that somebody who you know is able to write very good adult-themed stuff trying to keep it contained for a young audience or a younger audience. And something about it seems off from the writing standpoint. It's still really a solid book and it's a solid story. And I think that there's a lot of people who will really enjoy this, especially give it to some kid who's into STEM. And I think they'd really get a kick out of this book. But it's a little weird from an adult perspective reading this Scott Snyder writing for the younger audience. But other than that, I really don't have any complaints. I thought it was a fine issue. I was surprised that they're cramming two digital comics into one physical comic and keeping it at $4.99. That's a bargain right there to go and pick it up. The art is really good. But if you've already read it, if you got this as a Comixology original several months ago, then you probably don't need to pick this up now unless you're a physical type person. But if you are a physical comics person and you're looking for something different to read, then go check out Dudley Dotson and the Forever Machine number 1. It's published by Dark Horse Comics, but it is a Comixology original. If you want to buy the Comixology version, there is a link in the show notes for that. So there you go. Matthew, let's go back to last week with Fantastic Four number 19 from Marvel Comics.
Yep. Written by Ryan North and some really, really, really lovely art by Carlos Gomez. Fantastic Four volume 7, number 19, begins with a Sam Spade noir detective narration. And that was in the solicit as well. And I was like, okay, I know what this is, because they're like, even her name was something that let us know things were going to go bad real quick. Storm. So I'm like, okay, Ben Grimm is a detective and Susie's helping him. But no, we get to the point where Susie Storm walks into the detective's office. Just one look at her was all of us took to know she was beautiful. Too bad for her. I'm blind. And so the whole story is Alicia, the thing's wife, as a hard-boiled detective. And at first, it just seems like it's a cute little thing where Alicia is able to figure things out. She's able to scan a crime scene because her husband goes with her. And her husband, Ben Grimm, can tell her everything important in a crime scene. So Susie's husband has gone missing. Nobody knows where he is. They have to investigate. They find the agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., who in this case are basically the G-Men. The agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. don't know what happened to him. And Susie's brother is sleeping in an abandoned building, getting ready to burn it down to hide from the mafia. So he's going to be a literal torch and burn down this building to pretend that he's dead. She goes and she has to call in a favor from the local police officer. His name is Mackenzie, King Mackenzie. He's all imperious, you know what I'm saying? And as soon as she tells Namor Mackenzie that she's there to help Susie, he's like, oh, let me give you all of the information the police have. But it's really fun and it's really cute until it becomes clear what's happening? What has really happened in this story? And I don't want to tell you who, because it's actually hilarious. Somebody got a hold of a cosmic cube and changed the entirety of reality. And it's really lovely to see this story focusing on Alicia, because I feel like one of the things that's really missing from modern superhero comics are supporting characters who don't have superpowers. Steven and I reviewed the Flash TV show for 8 seasons, and over the course of 8 seasons, there were 75 members of the supporting cast. 74 of them got superpowers of one sort or another. The other one was, the guy from Rent, and he already has superpowers just by being Jesse. But if you have been following Fantastic Four, as I have off and on, I want you to know the art is really, really good. Part of the reason that I stopped following Fantastic Four was there were a couple of artists who could not draw the Thing in a way that didn't make me angry. But Gomez does really, really good art, and the ending is just note perfect. It's fun. It's not exactly silly, but there's definitely some whimsy in here. There's definitely some humor and some fun. And the best part, this is a done-in-one story. The downside is it's a $5 comic, and it doesn't seem to really have a reason to be a $5 comic other than we're Marvel and we're going to make our base comics cost $5, so that eventually a double-size issue will be $9.50, and then you will all just, bow to our rule. But that train may have sailed. 3.5 slices of meatloaf. Fantastic Four number 19 is a good book. I recommend checking it out, especially you two. I think you might enjoy
it. Is it that damn Franklin Richards kid? Is he messing around with stuff?
It's not.
Or is it Herbie bot that people should have put to sleep a long time ago?
Herbie is hilarious. You love Herbie. You know you love Herbie.
Only if he is a Volkswagen. Oh, yeah. Herbie's was murdered and his programming slipped in and became the ghost of a Volkswagen,
Beetle.
Yeah. Went back in time. I was possessed a Beetle. Yeah.
When was I was going to say they fired him and he started working for G-Force.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Herbie was introduced in 68, I think. The Love Bug was 68, and then Herbie Rides Again was 69.
Yeah, so the Love Bug, yeah. They killed him in his first appearance. Everything else is just a St. Elsewhere's thing.
No.
Anyway.
No.
Anyway.
I will not let you do that to Herbie.
No.
Herbie is sacrosanct, my friend. Beep.
Too bad. Buck.
Okay, that's
let's
weak.
Jump into next week because, oh, man. The pathway to get Dick Tracy finally into comic book form has been a long one. And now it is here next week from Mad Cave Studios. Rodrigo, how was it?
It was okay. Dick Tracy, written by Alex Segura, Michael Morrissey. And depending on where you look, Chantal Amy Osman, who is on the book listed as a creative consultant, so maybe somebody on the side of like Tribune.
Probably.
But artist Geraldo Borges. Dick Tracy, as you guys know, is a detective. He's got a cool watch. He finds who done did it. And there's like dames and stuff. This version of Dick Tracy is pretty grounded and doesn't really push the noir stuff visually too hard. Most of the time, people are standing in well-lit rooms. There's plenty of like shadows and stuff like that. And there are plenty of moments where things are dark and maybe you don't see somebody's face really well. But it's not constantly that, right? It's not trying to visually be anything noir. And it's not really trying to visually call back to the Dick Tracy comics, aside from the fact that Dick Tracy wears his signature yellow coat and hat.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sitting here reading this book and I'm like, so why? Why? What's the point, right? Dick Tracy was a very well-liked comic about a cool detective, and he had futuristic technology. He had larger-than-life enemies, and for the majority of this issue, Dick Tracy is interacting with like regular people, like beat cops and suspects and stuff like that, and they're all like normal-looking people, which make Dick Tracy's like yellow getup look really out of place. Like he would look less out of place if there was like a little monkey hanging out with him.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a crossover I want to see. But
yeah,
like there's nothing wrong with it. It's a perfectly serviceable detective story. But yeah, if you're not leaning into like the nation that controls magnetism controls the world, or any of the other weird stuff that came out of Dick Tracy, you just end up with like a normal detective story, because at the end of the day, Dick Tracy doesn't have any superpowers. He, you know, he doesn't talk to his dead brother to like figure out the cases. He doesn't, you know, he's just like a smart, cool guy who's good at things. And we have so many of those already. Again, it's not bad. It's perfectly fine. But as I'm sitting here reading this, I'm like, this doesn't even have to be Dick Tracy. Like, this could just be somebody else. You'd probably have spent less money trying to get the rights, and you could probably do more things with that character.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm guessing people still recall the comic and maybe the movie from, what was it, like the, like 1991? So maybe that recognition is still around in the atmosphere. I mean, that's part of the reason why I picked it up. Just because I'm cursed to forever remember the the grotesque makeup of that movie, which I don't even hate. I thought, you know, it has its place. It's actually, it's fine. But sometimes I'm like, small face. So altogether, I'm going to give Dick Tracy number one, 3 slices of meatloaf. Like I said, there's nothing wrong with it. We're clearly going somewhere. There's a little peep at like the weirder Dick Tracy world. Like you can see it off in the corner a little bit. And I'm like, as long as we're heading straight there, this should pick up. But if we're not, then this is going to probably stay parked at 3 slices.
Okay. All right. Definitely something I want to check out when it arrives next week from Mad Cave Studios. So thank you, Rodrigo, for sharing that, and Matthew. What did you give yours, Matthew? Did you give it a meatloaf rating?
3.5.
3.5 slices. I gave it 4 slices for Dudley Datson. So there you go. A big round of meatloaf for everybody. So
every time you say Dudley Datson, I think of the fact that Booger from Revenge of the Nerds was named Dudley Dawson.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's really weird. Hey, listen, thank you everyone who supports the show and everything that we do here at the Major Spoilers Podcast Network. Last week we were gone because of a computer meltdown. If you have listened to the little bits that were sent out last week, or if you are a VIP member over at our Patreon page, you get an even bigger slice of the pie on what actually was going on in the last month. So definitely go check it out. But a lot of people really stepped up in the last week to support Major Spoilers and ensure that we are continuing a little bit longer. So I got a long list of names to thank this week. First of all, Jim Fitzpatrick, a new silver member. Jim paid for a full year in advance and got a discount. So remember, when you do pay for that full year in advance, you pay for like 11 months and you get a month free. So it's like a great savings. So you might as well jump on that. So thank you, Jim. Helen Moore is also a new silver member. Thank you, Helen. Cassie Irons is our newest producer. Cassie's getting an exclusive Major Spoilers t-shirt for their patronage. Justin Higgins upped their pledge and is now an associate producer. Thank you so much, Justin. Card Mage is one of our newest gold members. Thank you so much, Card Mage. Your pledge includes access to the VIP chat, where I detailed all the shenanigans that happened in March and the first bit of April, leading up to some changes going on behind the scenes and our computer meltdown. Let's see, who else do we have? Gerald also increased their pledge and is also at the gold level, gets access to the GM Roundtable show, where Dr. Bradley, Will, and I discuss what's going to happen on our critical hit game, which is also a podcast in itself, so you can go listen to that. If you want the inside scoop or simply want to see where it all went wrong, then you need to check out the GM Roundtable, an exclusive for our gold level members and higher. Now listen, when you become a silver level patron, you get up to 4 bonus episodes each month. You're not going to find those episodes anywhere else, including our pre-show discussion this week, where we were talking about Scott Pilgrim Saves the World and also Fallout. So if you're interested in both of those things, you want to check out our Patreon page, patreon.com/majorspoilers. And if you sign up at the gold level, you get up to 8 bonus episodes each month, plus that true inside look at what it's like to run Major Spoilers. What other companies pull back the curtain like that? I don't think there's very many of them doing that. There's a few more people, but they came in so late when we were prepping the show. Thank you, everybody. I'm going to name those people next week. But here's the thing. Even if you sign up for the $2 membership right now, you get access to the Monday Mystery Matinee that Dr. Brad, Will, and I recorded, where we were talking about the first 3 episodes of the Sugar series on Apple TV. You can go and check that out at really any level that you sign up of, $2 or higher. So what are you waiting for? Become a good patron. Show that you value our work that we do for you, and join a cool group of kids. You get access to secret Discord channels. You just get access to Discord. You get that for free. And there's a lot of cool things that are going on over in the Discord. A lot of cool people to hang out with over there. It's all part of the Major Spoilers experience, and a lot of it happens at patreon.com/majorspoilers. We are diving back into the world of the manga this week as we take a look at One Piece Volume 1. This is the English language edition put out by Viz Media. So if you are a Shōjin Jump reader and that's how you originally read it, this ain't that. I mean, it is, but it isn't. If you're a original Japanese reader, you'll be happy to know that this is a right-to-left reading experience. And for those of you that don't like reading right to left, too bad. That's how it's printed. Although I'm curious, though, one of the things that happens when you do that translation, even if you keep the right to left reading, sometimes they flip the panels around to keep the balloons in order. Do you know if that's going on here or not? Anybody?
I don't think so. You're flipping right to left, and also you're reading right to left.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah, I know sometimes they do that. I know Akira did that quite a bit in some of the pages when Dark Horse did their adaptation years ago. But this is the story of one Monkey D. Luffy who wants to become the greatest pirate of the world. And he's going after the One Piece, the greatest treasure in the world. And even though he's can't swim, he is super stretchy because he ate the Gum Gum Devil Fruit and gained powers to stretch like rubber. And so in this first volume, we are introduced to our main character, and we are introduced to, I don't know who any of these people are, the sword guy, and then we get, at the very end, introduction to Nami.
In this, Zolo, in other translations, Zoro.
Ah, okay, right. There you go.
Because, I mean, it's kind of the same noise when you're speaking Japanese.
Sure.
So here's the interesting thing. Because I have kids, I have been exposed to the One Piece animated series a lot, especially for one kid who is obsessive about rewatching and rewatching things again and again and again. I have seen at least the first 5 or 6 episodes of the first series of One Piece, the anime that you can get anywhere. I think right now it's on Netflix. I also have had the pleasure of watching the first 3 or 4 live action episodes of One Piece. And I was having a conversation with both of the boys at dinner the other night. I was like, wow, both the anime and the live action are super faithful to the original comic, except for maybe the name of Zoro and Zolo.
Yeah.
So for me, this was pretty easy to follow and pretty easy to pick up because I'd seen at least part of the source material in other places.
Yeah, if you've watched the first season of the TV show, and if you watch or if you've watched the Netflix live action stuff, then you know all the major beats that are going to be in this volume. Mm-hmm. They're all still there.
In fact,
except I asked a friend of mine, because in the TV show, there's this character that shows up probably around the middle of it. And I'm like, oh, is that character going to show up? And he's like, no, you're like 300 issues out from that character showing up. So they do remix things to sort of push certain storylines and maybe push certain others to the background for now.
Yeah. Yeah. The clown pirate does not show up in this first volume.
Right.
So what'd you think there, Rodrigo? Is this the first time you've read One Piece in manga form?
This is the first time I've read One Piece in manga form. I have never been super into One Piece. I have this terrible condition in that I am very annoyed with shonen protagonists.
Ah.
And I would put Luffy as a 3 in the Naruto scale. There's probably more annoying characters than Naruto, but I specifically don't go looking for that sort of shonen.
It's so funny. It's so funny because like One Piece, Naruto, Bleach. What's the other one?
Yep.
There's like two more that are like top five. I was asking the youngest the other day. I picked him up from school. I was like, so what are the top five animes out there?
And he's probably rattling JoJo them off. Nowadays.
Yeah, JoJo, and then probably Cowboy Bebop.
But
it's funny when you're just like, oh, I don't like these characters because they're annoying. Is that your problem with shonen characters, is their annoyingness?
It tends to be. Whether I pick up usually a TV show, I don't read a lot of manga. It's not easy for me to get nowadays. I'll start watching an episode, and usually the first thing that happens that's going to let me know if I like it or not is the protagonist annoying? And a lot of them are. There's a lot of shows that have lived long enough in my eye, right, where they're like, oh, this protagonist isn't annoying, I'll keep watching it, that then turn out to be bad anyway. Mm-hmm. like Sword Art Online. Most of the time, that's the first indication, right? My wife and I are starting a Spy Family. I am not annoyed by any of the characters. The character that probably would be the most annoying, I find very cute. So that's one that we are very slowly watching, especially because we're also watching Fallout. My initial reaction to Luffy was this character is annoying. Having seen the TV show, I was like, hey, you know, I really enjoyed the Netflix adaptation.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go start watching the anime, and that way I can talk to my friend who's watched it and read all 9,000 volumes of One Piece, and to my nephews who I know watch the anime. And I did not get through the first episode. I was like, this character is so annoying.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think that is kind of, because, you know, as much as I like Midoriya, he's kind of annoying too.
Oh, totally.
What is it about these annoying characters that end up becoming like the big thing for all these animations?
I think all of these characters exist in sort of like a small Venn diagram of archetypes. Really, they're all the same archetype. Mm-hmm. They start out weak but very strong, right? That's like the weird contradiction of shonen protagonists. Mm-hmm. Like they don't know anything about the world, but they have some sort of like attack or alternate form or something that makes them more powerful and draws other people to them. And I think in the same way that like a lot of Western characters are like stoic and they're like, no, I reject this call to action. I do not want it. And then, you know, later on, like their mom gets eaten by a bear or something. And then they're like, forsooth, I shall now become the Batman. That's what I think, by the way, the background of Batman is.
Yeah.
So, right. It's like, you can also be annoyed by that guy. You can be annoyed by that, like, stoic, stubbly guy who, refuses the call three times until something bad happens. Just like these characters are the same thing, except they're like kids, they're little boys, they're like impetuous and loud, and they're voiced by high-pitched people in the shows, which is, I think, also an important part of it. Not that I have a problem with people with high-pitched voices. It's just they're specifically voiced to be, like, whiny and annoying, so they can then transform into a true hero later, right? Yeah. But I don't like that starting point because they're annoying.
Matthew, is it? Right. Do you think it's because the target audience is probably that 10 to 13-year-old age group, and they want a kid that is spunky and full of life and sass and who's ready to take on an adventure just like, you know, the readers might want to, that wish fulfillment part. Like Robin is kind of that way in his, especially in his 60s incarnations, where he's a little bit of exuberant and maybe a little bit of a jerk at times in the way that he wants to jump into the adventure.
Very much so. I think the thing about Shonen that is almost universal is that there's your tongue is somewhat in your cheek with most of these. Even, you know, you look at like your Son Goku's and you look at your Naruto's and you look at all of the characters. There's some humor. There's a little bit of, oh, yes. And, you know, I have to say it. I need to say it now. I want you guys to know I apologize. I hate Monkey D. Luffy so much. I hate this character. I can't stand his name. I can't stand it. Just there is something about him. It's that combination of implacable, unstoppable, perfect Batman ace and complete idiot. Mm-hmm. And she, there are some characters that I feel like are the, here's the designated protagonist. And because he's the designated protagonist, he doesn't lose. And a lot of times that's an exaggeration. And I think when it comes to One Piece, it's not an exaggeration. But so
I guess I've always said, okay, go ahead. Yeah.
When you do get into that shonen, it really is kind of, it's meant to be, because manga comes out weekly over years. It's kind of meant to be a story that grows up with the characters, literally in this case, because it has a time skip halfway through. But you have that thing where it appeals to your 10 and 11 year olds, but then you also get a little bit of the violence. We get introduced to Nami at the very end of this, and Nami the sexy. And, you know, you do have that I'm 13 years old. I want to travel the world with a pretty girl and punch evil things and, you know, do whatever I want. And it does get that whole wish fulfillment, but it does it in a way that, for me as a Western reader, feels very retro. It feels like the stories that I used to read in Boy's Life in the 70s that were themselves from, you know, the 50s and 60s. And it's nice to see that through a different cultural lens, even though I want to just grab Monkey D. Luffy by his little neck and make his head go back and forth.
So I'm just curious, and because this is maybe something that's not accurate or not, I know that Dragon Ball is supposed to be a retelling of Journey to the West, but isn't Monkey D. Luffy also Journey to the West? Isn't he also?
I don't think Luffy is supposed to be the Monkey King. Mm-hmm. If he is, then I mean maybe because the Monkey King had lots of powers and is basically indestructible,
right?
Like, and you know they had to do things like stick him under a mountain to like prevent him from doing mischievous things. So Luffy is very powerful, like Luffy, but he doesn't strike me as a Monkey King character. Yeah. He might be. The influence might be there.
Yeah. When I went to get the review copy that we have, the first thing that popped up for me was the latest volume. Volume 105 of Monkey D. Luffy's Adventures. And I'm like, just those words and numbers together.
Yeah, that's volume 105, not volume issue 105. Yeah.
Correct. And a chill filled the room. But I feel like part of the thing with this is I can't remember it now. Dang it. It's not Journey to the West, but there's another archetypical character/storyline that kind of feels like it at the beginning. But by the time we get to volume 105...
Oh, yeah. Like
it's something entirely different.
Oh, yeah. And Dragon Ball is the same way. I mean, it started out as supposed to be Journey to the West, but it evolved into its own thing.
Yeah. And if you read a current-ish issue of One Piece, it'll be unrecognizable, right? It's like Luffy's still there, and like the majority of the characters are sort of still there.
Right.
But they've escalated things so much, like... They're like, oh, who's this giant cat? Like, who's this like enormous lady now? Right. Like, you know, who's this little dog with like
nine swords?
Yeah. So that is part of the fun of something like One Piece, is that first off, you can look at issue one and issue 1000 and see where things are now.
Mm-hmm.
And also that if you have been reading it or you decide to pick it up from the very beginning, you will see this slow transition. And sometimes I think fast transition. I think, you know, sometimes the writer is like, okay, I'm done with this arc, next arc, because this is my source of income and I'm not stopping doing this.
Right.
Next arc is going to be a heist. You know what I mean? It's going to be like something completely different with the same characters, because that's a story that I want to tell now, even though it maybe clashes in tone with previous stuff. And, you know, people will fall on and off, you know, people will fall off and jump on. And, you know, it's just like current comics in the US, but they're all written by one person. So you have much more of that continuity, not in the sense of like the things that happen are because of things that happened previously, but sort of that like thematic and sort of like personal continuity with the characters.
Yeah. Matthew, did you like One Piece? Did you like this volume?
I respect.
It's okay if you don't like it. You can say you don't like things.
I don't like One Piece. I've never cared for One Piece. I don't know. It may be. Honestly, I think there is an element of it that I came to One Piece after I had already seen the whole of Kaizoku Sentai Gokaiger, which is a similar story about a similar character assembling a crew and going after the greatest treasure in the universe. And in that sense, it may be that I'm having that moment that my friend Chris had in college, where if you asked him, what's your favorite Beatles song, he'd tell you, Steven Tyler's cover of Come Together. It may be that I liked something strongly influenced by it so much that going back to the source bugs me. It may be that at 50, 53 years old, I'm not the shonen comics target audience.
Yeah, I'm probably not either. I mean, I see what this book is doing and it looks like a lot of fun. And certainly for the target audience, which I don't think I am in this series. I can see how it can be a lot of fun. I can see why my son likes to watch this show again and again and again. I understand why he knows who the characters are and what their arcs are and why they change and do the things that they do. And, you know, I get it. That's the target audience and it's great. I'm glad that his age group, and really, and I'm not saying that if you're over the age of 13, what are you doing watching One Piece? Because I know a lot of people love One Piece around the world. That's why it's in probably the top five of all animes. But I can see just through his eyes why it's important to him and why it's good. It doesn't really resonate with me, I think, because a little bit of Rodrigo, a little bit of Matthew, in that I find Luffy incredibly annoying. The storyline is a little bit too zany for my taste.
Yeah, it's frantic.
But I will say the art, as rough as it is from however many years ago. Oh, no, Stephen, this was published just 2 years ago, and it's already up to 1,000. They've got to crank out these comics every week. There's something appealing about the original art style that reminds me, and I'm trying to think of the Mad Magazine artist who this reminds me of. It's not Al Jaffe. Who?
Jack Davis?
No, Jack Davis does stuff that's more realistic. Jack Davis. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking maybe it's Dave Berg who I'm thinking of. I'm thinking of somebody that used to do these really kind of crazy circle eyes with like...
John Martin?
Oh, no. Maybe.
Sergio Aragonés?
No, definitely not Aragonés. But Don Martin, that may be who I'm thinking of.
Did his characters have hinges in their feet?
No, no, not Don Martin. No, 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 no. Okay. That's Don Martin. No, no, no. I'm thinking of somebody else. But maybe it's a combination of both Don Martin and Al Jaffe combined. I don't know. But all I know is that there are definitely panels and characters portrayed in this issue that reminded me of early Mad Magazine days. And mm-hmm. so I kind of appreciated the art for that, even though at times there's stuff where you have to really stop and slow down, even though the action's trying to move at a million miles an hour, to really make sense of, is he really stretching it out that far? Is he really, you know, what's going on here? So there's some kind of an appreciation to the art in this.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
One Piece began in 97.
Yeah.
And at the point in time that it began, I want to say Eiichiro was like 24,
yeah,
25 years old. And you look at it now, it's almost 25 years later and still putting out stuff that people are enjoying with these characters, you know, one creator or, you know, one creator with whatever support team they have. That is the thing that I cannot fathom. That's the thing that I really respect about One Piece. It's not my bag, but dang, it's an impressive bag.
Yeah, these characters have definitely changed, but I think they've changed to show time has passed and growth. Like, these characters' models, like, have not changed that much. Like, mm-hmm. if you read only this and you watch, like, the last appearance of Zoro or Zolo, you're going to recognize him immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, same thing with Luffy, right? Luffy looks exactly the same. His, like, design is nailed from the beginning. That's kind of what I was most surprised at, especially looking at something like we saw with Dorohedoro,
mm-hmm.
where you can see that from the those initial issues to the final issues and the latest issues and the animated show, some of the designs have changed very drastically.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a thing of like finding where you want the character to go. But here I'm like, oh, so like these characters were just like already designed to begin with, right? There's like almost no like finding what they're supposed to be doing. Like the three members of the crew that we meet, like, are basically going to look like this, except they're just going to like get a little older
mm-hmm.
for the mm-hmm. rest right. of the for the rest of the book.
Now, a word of warning for everyone who's like, I'll just wait till it's finished and then read it all then. This series is going to end in a couple of years. This was announced back in January that Oda has said that he is going to wrap up the series in the next couple of years.
He already did.
Oh, did he? No, this is, let's see. One Piece, the epic adventure, creator is weaving the final saga, leaving fans on the edge of their seats with each new chapter. Let's see. Has expressed desire to bring the series to a close within the coming years.
Oh, okay.
So yeah.
I thought it was over already.
No, no, no. This is from January 15th of 2024.
Okay.
It's so, this year.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I enjoyed it. It was good. It was fun. It was there for a laugh. I see where it's going. I agree with you, Matthew, that reading this week after week, or however, how quick that this new installment comes out,
mm-hmm.
I think I might get a little frustrated. And again, I haven't read past volume one, and I certainly haven't watched all of any of the anime or the live action stuff.
Right.
But at some point as a fan, I think I'd probably get tired unless the stories are really, really good and they keep introducing, you know, new characters and new adventures that are just as exciting. I think I'd be like, haven't I found the One Piece yet? That may be my biggest, you know, if I've got to read 1,000 issues of this thing or 39 volumes of this thing, I think I might get a little tired of, haven't they found this yet? Hasn't Batman rid Gotham City of crime once and for all yet?
Yeah. So, I think,
yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
No, no, no. I was just going to wrap up, but go ahead and add your bit.
Yeah. I think that a few issues from this one that we read, a few volumes, like maybe next volume, maybe in the next two volumes, this is all going to click.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's like, although I feel like the art is already so close to its final form, I think the story is still kind of finding itself.
Mm-hmm.
I think at some point this clicks and then it's like, oh, okay, here are the stakes. Here's what the characters want. Here's like their opposition. Here's why it's important. Here's why it's relevant. Here's why we care. Like, Right.
I wish I knew a little bit
kind
more.
Of not in this first volume.
I wish I kind of knew a little bit more about the manga publishing process. Because if this is just one of those things where it's like, we have to fill the pages of this magazine, give me whatever you got. And somebody walks in off the street and goes, well, I've got this thing about a stretchy kid who wants to be the king of the pirates. And he's going after the legendary One Piece treasure. And they're like, great, let's run it for like six issues and find out how it does. And six issues in, the guy's still cranking them out. And he's like, okay, well, let's just keep going. And then, like you say, Rodrigo, by the time you hit issue 52, a full year into the story, finally, people are like, oh, no, this is really a cool thing. Yeah. This needs to be a regular feature in our comic book Go for the next 25 years. I wish I knew how that process worked a little bit more, because then I might be able to wrap my mind around how does something run for 25 years.
And
like
almost certainly that process was different back in 1994.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah,
right. True. So clearly that's changed a lot.
What are your final thoughts, Matthew?
Well, I got to tell you, I think there's like 7 or 8 Straw Hat Pirates and 157 million supporting characters. If you've wondered, how do I get into One Piece? I feel like this might be a place for you to check. Now, here's the thing. I said, do I want to get into One Piece? Read this and said, no, that is not in any indication of the quality of the work. It's just that it doesn't resonate with me. I definitely see that the art is well done. I feel like there's a lot to like here. And I feel like if you have a slightly greater tolerance for a 17-year-old child screaming at the top of his lungs every single page, then it's definitely something you may want to check into. In a worst-case scenario, you can read this, you can go, hey, this is the beginning of 105 volumes, and then you can see how you feel about that. But definitely, I say it's worth at least borrowing.
Okay, Rodrigo?
Yeah, I think it probably sounded like I came down a little hard on One Piece. I think it's fine, because we got into like what makes a shonen protagonist annoying, and then we went from there. But One Piece is well drawn. It's really fun. It's whimsical, right? So if you are here in the future world of 2024, or whenever you're listening to this, hello, future people, and saying, boy, I'm tired of these like edgy, like tattoo protagonists that all the shonen manga have now. I want to read something more, you know, whimsical, something more childlike, something that has like more wonder. It's like, actually pick up the first issue of One Piece and go from there. Like, yeah. This is actually pretty good for that.
I think you've been hanging around Matthew and I too much, Rodrigo, because I know you haven't crossed the Brimley cocoon line yet, but you're starting to sound like it.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
By the way, for manga, we have to say, konnichiwa, mirahito.
I don't have to say that. Future. I will say though that I enjoyed this for what it is. It's definitely something that is not for me that I would want to read future volumes. I think the zany wackiness part of the story is what doesn't appeal to me. And I would want something that's maybe a little bit more grounded, he said, talking about manga comics. And so I think this is something that I would borrow or dip into occasionally, but this is not, you know, honestly, I could probably pick up a volume 22 right now and not have any problem figuring out what's going on. But in the same way with My Hero Academia, same way with the other things that we've read in the manga world here. This is one that I personally would skip, but I think everybody owes it to themselves, if nothing more than just to sample things in different media. Just like Rodrigo and I have been talking about Three Body Problem. Just like we've been talking about Fallout, Brad and I talking about some mystery stuff. I think One Piece is one of those things where read the first volume, watch the first couple of episodes of the anime, Watch the first couple of episodes of the live action series and see if any of that clicks with you. But then I think you will see that, like Dora Hedoro, they do a very good job of adapting the source material each time. And so that's something that I kind of appreciate in all of this discussion.
Man, if you pick up issue one of One Piece, the first volume, and you love it, like, congratulations.
Yeah.
You have so much media to get through.
Yeah.
You can absolutely do it at your own pace. So, like, congratulations if you get into it.
I'm also curious from our listeners, because I know a lot of our listeners are huge anime manga fans. I'm curious, because I asked the youngest, I said, are you interested in reading the One Piece manga? He said, no, I'm satisfied with the anime show. I wonder how many people are only anime people who have never read the manga, or vice versa. I'm going to bet that there's more people that have watched the anime than have read the manga.
Yeah, that's likely.
When did the anime come out?
I don't know. Mm-hmm. My son turned 11 2 years ago. So as far as I know, it came out 2 years ago.
That's when everything materialized. Right. That's when anime first appeared.
Yeah, the anime first appeared when the oldest was 10. So there you go.
Looks like it started in 1999.
Woo.
Okay.
Almost 20 years.
That's a long time.
Yeah. Over 20 years. Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. That is our take on One Piece. Maybe you have some thoughts, good or bad, about One Piece. We would encourage you to head over to the Major Spoilers Discord server. It's free to join. There's a link in the show notes. There's new people joining every day. And as soon as you jump in and say hi, everybody will welcome you with big open arms and crazy gifts, flying cats, it looks like, this week. So everybody is super welcoming, and it wants you to come over and share your thoughts in one of our many, many, many channels. And as a reminder, if you found value in this show and you want to become a patron, when you sign up at the silver level membership, that's just $5 a month, you get access to secret channels on the Major Spoilers Discord reserved only for our Major Spoilers patrons. More information at patreon.com/majorspoilers. We will be back next week. ? Why? Because we know that you love comics and we do too. And we will talk with you soon.
Bad the X-ray vision of Superman. I could save a few bucks and stand around and read through the covers of the comics on the stand. But although every other page would be backwards, I suppose I could still read the evens and the odds. Well, I don't know. Guess I haven't thought this all the way through. Plus, as soon as the comic book store guy knew to kick my butt out on the corner. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Think about a better way. If I was hulking green or gray, I could just bust through that brick wall, take their comic books away. But then the little meat would deal with all the tanks and bombs and guns. Have you ever tried to read a series with all that going on? Guess I need to rethink this plan. How would I back and board my comics with such huge hands? Guess I already told ya. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. If I'm Stark Raven, it's like a man of iron. Might not be surprised if I'm that I might actually have the heart cold to follow an entire storyline. But would I really even need to read up on all those escapades? I mean, who needs such distractions when your sister's such a babe? But the downside is such a beast. Being shot up in a fun, being in the middle race with a king sign throwing soldier. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. Whoa, 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 whoa. What a major spoiler.
This podcast is copyright 2024 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.